The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio. Welcome to our top story this hour. We've been talking about the crime that has really hit all of Western Washington. We've told you so many of those stories, and we will continue to share these stories because until our elected leaders come to their senses, you know, one of the common threads, again, King and Snohomish counties both have legalized small possession amounts of all drugs, heroin, meth, you name it. So we have a lot of people who are drug addicts who are committing crimes to feed their addiction. And there was a story, you know, Snohomish is such a beautiful town, wonderful salt of the earth people. I used to do a lot of my earliest radio work up in Snohomish, and I just know the people up there well. And when I heard what happened at 11 o'clock on a Friday morning, just a couple of days ago, it just is another example of how far things have fallen around here. Let me take you live to Snohomish, where Carolyn Dent, who lives there, joins us here on Cairo Radio. Hey, Carolyn, I appreciate you coming on with me this afternoon.
It's my pleasure, too.
And, Carolyn, you live there with your husband, Jim. How long have you guys lived in Snohomish?
44 years.
Okay. All right. So you truly are Snohomish through and through, it sounds like.
We are.
Okay.
Yes.
And do you mind me sharing your age with my listeners?
Not at all.
Okay. You're 75 and Jim is 77.
That's correct.
Okay. So, Carolyn, tell me what happened to you and Jim on Friday morning, just 3 days ago.
Well, I am upstairs in my bedroom changing my clothes to meet a friend for lunch, and I look over toward the doorway, and there is a fellow standing there with his face covered except for his eyes, and he proceeds to tell me that he's a federal agent, and he has a warrant to... for a felon, and he has a search warrant to search our house.
No, wait a second. Yeah. I mean, immediately, I'm guessing you're not buying that a federal agent would have
exactly.
a mask covering their face.
That's right. I was a school teacher for 25 years.
Okay, all right.
If that tells you anything.
Whoops.
And anyway, I said, get out of here. What are you doing here? Get out of here. You don't belong here. And I am only... in my bra and panties. So
oh, my goodness. Okay.
I grab my bathrobe and proceed to the hand railing going downstairs and call my husband because he is downstairs in the bathroom.
And how big is this man with the mask on?
I would say he's probably 6 foot.
Okay.
And thin.
Okay. And are you, I mean, you sound... As you describe it, you sound kind of calm and collected. Were you in the moment?
You know, I was, fortunately. I don't know why exactly, because I can tend to be a little scatterbrained at times.
Okay.
I think the Lord was keeping me focused.
Okay.
Anyway, I proceeded to call Jim, and while I'm standing there, I pull the part of the mask down from this fellow's face. See, I don't know how I could have gotten so brazen.
Well, yeah, you have a little bit of feistiness in you, it sounds like,
well,
Carolyn.
I do.
Okay.
I guess I'm not your average 75-year-old. Anyway, I proceed downstairs... to get Jim, and I go into the kitchen, and about that time, Jim emerges from the bathroom and meets the fellow in the doorway of the kitchen. And when I get to the kitchen, there is the second fellow there.
Oh, no.
And we're in the kitchen, and Jim said, what are you doing here? Get out of here. And he kind of gives the guy a shove, and at that point... the guns emerge from their pockets or wherever they were. And
so how much does that change your perspective on the event?
It's frightening.
Yeah.
But I still remain relatively calm. They take Jim farther down the hallway in front of the stairway and tell him to get down on the ground, and they zip tie his hands behind his back. And the guy keeps saying, "Where's the money? Where's the money?" And then he says, "Where's your bedroom?" And Jim said, "It's upstairs." And that fellow then proceeds to go upstairs. The second fellow, I think, just stands guard over Jim because I'm left alone.
Yeah.
I go immediately into our family room and grab my cell phone. I have since learned how to use my cell phone to call 911 much faster than I could at that point.
Good for you.
The second fellow comes into the family room, grabs the phone from me, and goes in then into the hallway. My feeling is they thought I was old and they didn't have to worry about me.
Sure. And had they, I heard that they physically hit your husband, is that right?
Yes, they did.
With the pistol?
He says yes. It was a hard, very hard hit. It didn't knock him out or anything, but it definitely was a hard hit.
Okay. And so
I'm in the family room again, and they leave me, and I grab the house phone and get through to 911, and I leave the phone down on the floor, and I'm kind of laying over it. I can't hear what the operator is saying, but I give them my address and my name and all of that information. Apparently the second fellow hears me talking, comes in, finds the phone, takes the phone, but goes out and says, "I'm out of here. They've called 911. And so
they took off then?
That they took off, but I didn't realize they were taking off because I could not hear what he said.
No, I got
and,
you.
So I get up again, and I book it out of the house and down the hill, and I'm in the middle of the street in my bathrobe.
Yeah.
Trying to wave down traffic.
Look, it's and you had to flag somebody down?
Yes, I did.
Okay. And what's that like?
The first people that went by didn't stop, but
yeah,
I don't blame him in a way.
No, I can understand that. But, 11 o'clock on a Friday morning, they got in because you live in what you thought was a safe place, I assume, and your doors are not locked, right?
That exactly right.
Yeah.
But, you know, we've lived here for 40-some years, and we've never used a locker house. We left the keys in the car. You know,
things have changed.
It's gotten to be that you just can't do that anymore.
No, you certainly can't. So are you and Jim physically okay?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we are.
What did they take?
Our pickup.
Oh, they did get your truck?
Yes. Before they left, they went through Jim's pockets and took his car keys and left with our truck.
Are you convinced that because so much of the property crime in our entire region is fueled by drugs, are you convinced that that's what was fueling this?
I can't say for certain.
Okay. Were you able to get a look at the guy when you were grabbing for his mask?
Yes, I was. I could tell you who he wasn't. But I don't know if I could totally identify him.
Okay.
I did see his face, clean cut, young fellow in his 20s. He had all of his teeth, so that kind of indicated to me he wasn't on meth.
Yeah. So what does this do? I mean, you've had a couple nights in the house since this happened. What does this do to the peace and tranquility and safe harbor that we always feel about our homes?
Yeah, it does a lot. I mean, I am very conscious of any movement outside right now, and my doors are locked. And it makes you uneasy.
Well, I'm sorry you guys are going through this. That's not a... Hey, I mean, I just know that home is our sanctuary, and I know how unsettling that must be.
Yeah.
What have the cops told you about this?
They were fantastic. They took pictures and, I mean, they were here for about 5 hours, interviewed us at length.
Okay.
Just were marvelous.
Well, hopefully they will catch the guys and you can have a little bit of peace back in your life there in Snohomish, Kate. Or Carolyn,
right.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Carolyn, I appreciate you coming on with me this afternoon.
It was interesting. Okay. Another chapter in my life.
Okay, you can imagine. Well, give my best to your husband, too, okay?
I will.
Okay, take
All
care.
Right.
Thank you. Carolyn and Jim Dent in Snohomish, intruders taking away sanctuary Friday morning from them. Next up in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead update.
A couple weeks ago, we told you the story about the out-of-control RV in West Seattle that crashed through the side of a building, broke a gas line, started a fire. That building is the West Seattle Health Club. And at the time of this incident, I talked with their VP of Operations, Dan Lehr, who joins us once again here on Cairo Radio. Dan, good to talk to you again.
Thanks for having me.
When we talked a couple weeks ago, I told you I'd want to follow up with what the city had done in regards to the crash that cost your business so much money. So first of all, let's go back in case people weren't listening a couple weeks ago and just remind me and my listeners of the incident itself. What happened?
Yeah, a couple of Wednesdays ago around 1:30 a.m., an RV that I guess the occupants had just robbed a Safeway store up the street from our club came barreling down a hill, a steep hill behind our club, lost control of their vehicle, smashed through the back wall of the club, rupturing a gas main, which started a fire that really caused a lot of smoke damage in our 10,000 square foot pool area. Right now, and this is a preliminary number, right now we're looking at well over $300,000 worth of damage.
And this was an RV and the surrounding area RVs that you had often complained to the city about, you told me.
That's right. This RV in particular had been parked in and around the club at various times over the past year. It had been modified with shelving and a sleeping platform, and I had personally witnessed two people living in it at various times in and around the club.
And, you know, what I said at the time, Dan, was I'm really sorry for the property damage to your business. But, you know, there but for the grace of God, that RV could have just as easily smashed into a car carrying a family. It could have wiped, I mean, it would have killed anybody that it had struck in a vehicle. And the danger of these things, I don't know what it's going to take for the city to start cleaning things up. So tell me what's transpired in the, you know, less than 2 weeks since this RV crashed through your business. First of all, have they caught the guys?
No, and that's really disappointing. We have a very good idea of who it is and where they're currently living. We also know the parents of the driver, or excuse me, the owner. They're located out here in the West Seattle neighborhood, and we've given all this information to the police, and as of today, there have been no arrests at all.
So you know the parents of the person who owns this RV?
That's correct. One of our members lives up the street, had seen the RV parked in front of the house, and actually talked to the owner of the RV, asking him to move it. It was kind of an eyesore, and obviously if you saw the RV, you really can't miss it. It's been spray-painted blue, and it has orange hubcaps on it. It's very distinctive.
But you could essentially hand to Seattle police who was involved on a silver platter and they're not doing anything about it?
That's right. We have. I've contacted them on several occasions, given them all the information that we have. We've had a lot of members and other Good Samaritans that have throughout the community that have given even pictures of the guy. And I've forwarded that on to them, and I have yet to hear anything back. It's been disappointing, to say the least.
So you get just no response? They don't tell you anything about the investigation?
Just that it's ongoing. That's about it. I've talked to several different officers, some that have come out to the scene and taken my statement. I've talked to a couple of the investigating officers. They've contacted me. This was, a few weeks ago, right after the incident that happened. Other than that, there's been really no follow-up by them as to any progress that they've made.
Well, now that they've crashed an RV through the side of your business, causing $300,000 worth of damage, what happens if, while this investigation's unfolding, what happens if these guys do something so reckless that it kills somebody? I mean, that's the question that comes to my mind. If we could get them off the streets now, and you sound like you could help Seattle police get them off the streets today.
Absolutely. Yeah, and even other than that, you know, this is the second time this has happened. I think I mentioned that to you. We've lucked out both times. And I think I've said this to several other investigators, is that, hey, if somebody gets killed, the blood of that victim's hands is going to be on the hands of Seattle City Council and the mayor's office for not doing anything. These RVs are still parked in and around Andover. I'm still reporting it on the Find It, Fix It app. I'm still calling SPD. I'm still calling the mayor's office, and they're still here.
So Lisa Herbold is your district's council person. Anything from her?
Yeah, she gave me a really nice long email explaining the remediation program. But the remediation program is ineffective, as are the parking rules. And I've seen no acknowledgement of my suggestion, which is to just have no overnight parking allowed and then provide them with an area to go. There's even been a lot of the occupants of the RVs have said, hey, if we had a place to go, we would go. So they're not listening to the people in the RVs, and they're certainly not listening to me.
No. Well, somebody is going to be killed one of these days. We've had certainly rapes and murders committed by the drug vagrants around the city already. So nothing seems to change until we make massive change in city government. I don't know what they're ever going to do, because they seem completely disinterested with the concerns of tax-paying, job-creating citizens like you.
I think what the problem is, Dory, they have their egos wrapped up in their programs that they've put out there. The problem is the cost to run these programs is really prohibitive.
Sure.
The city has already spent $500,000 in the past 10 months, and we still have this problem. They've got to divorce themselves, take a good long look at their program and the fact that they're not effective, take a step back and go in another direction.
Yeah, but they don't want to clean up the city, Dan. They want to spend our money. And that really is the reason they're tolerating all of this, so they can use it to justify tax increases. And they don't care about fixing the problem. I've become absolutely certain of that in watching this over the years.
I agree. The budgets are just being done for 2019, and Lisa Herbold flat out said that if we want to fix the problem, we need more money. Well, I'm sorry, that's just not going to work. It's just a waste of taxpayers' time and money and SPD and the whole crew.
Yep.
It's a joke.
I agree with you. Well, hang in there, Dan. I'm sorry to hear that nothing's changing, and I hope that nobody's killed by these people when you could deliver them today to law enforcement. It's a real shame, but I hope you guys hang in there with all the madness around you.
We will. Thank you.
Dan Lehr, he's the Vice President of Operations at the West Seattle Health Club. That's your big lead this hour. And coming up next, we'll count down our favorite sound bites of the day here on the Dory Monson Show. Well, this is when we usually count down our favorite sound bites of the day, but instead of a 3-2-1 for today, I'm going to just replay one of my favorite interviews of the year, of several years, I don't know, about an hour ago. In case you weren't able to listen at 1:30 this afternoon, I talked with 20, I don't know if she's 26 or 27 years old now, but a young woman named Kate. Her best friend is Kenzie, And Kenzie was in a sorority at the UW with my two older daughters. She was kind of right in between my two older daughters. And she alerted us over the weekend to what Kenzie was doing for this young woman that I talked to an hour ago. Her name is Kate. And I talked with Kate. And it's one of the most beautiful, inspiring, heartbreaking, uplifting stories that we've told in a long, long time. And I would encourage you to listen to the entire interview because she grabbed my heart. Kate told me right at the beginning what she's dealing with in life right now.
At 25, I was diagnosed with stage 3, grade 3, triple negative breast cancer. And it's one of the most aggressive forms of breast cancer. And then this last April at 26, I was diagnosed with stage 4. So right now there's no cure for metastatic breast cancer. I'm stage 4 breast cancer, but I'm feeling great. I have a great team of doctors. A shout out to Dr. Keach and everyone at MultiCare and Gig Harbor and at SUCA is where I'm getting chemo now. And I just feel so blessed.
I mean, I hear a girl my daughter's age battling terminal cancer who talks with so much positivity and spirit and joy.
She truly is inspiring.
Oh, my goodness. So she and Kenzie, your best friend, they went to Detroit yesterday for the Seahawks game. Some they do. They go to one road game. They try to go one game a year, and they went to yesterday's game.
Luke Wilson is my favorite football player. That kind of sparked the idea of coming to Detroit for the game.
Okay, but your expectation was to just go and watch a football game and come home, right?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Mackenzie convinced me to get first row tickets because we were like, if we're going all the way there, we should be in the first row.
Nice.
So yesterday we showed up to the game and we made a sign, and our sign said 65 plus chemo, so Tuesday will be my 66th chemo. It said 8 weeks of radiation, 2 surgeries, 2,325 miles or something like that from Seattle to Detroit, and then cancer can't stop at 12.
And then cancer can't stop at 12. And then she talked about before the game, the Seahawks president, Chuck Allen, saw her sign and invited her down on the field. So she got to watch warm-ups, and she said that made it the best day ever. But then it got better because the Seahawks, when they scored their first touchdown of the day.
Pistol formation, Russell play fake. He's going to throw to the end zone. Tyler Lockett is out there. He makes the catch. He's in. Touchdown, Seahawks.
So Tyler Lockett caught that first touchdown. If you watched the game, you saw that. You probably did not see what happened right after that.
I mean, we went crazy. We were so excited. And then we kind of calmed down and we all sat down and we were like, well, that was amazing. You know, we were just kind of like, you know, just like in the moment. And all of a sudden, I see someone reach over the bar and hand me a football. And I looked down, and it was Tyler Lockett. And all I could get out was, thanks, Tyler. You know, I couldn't say anything else. And he just handed it to me, and he walked away. And then he wrote on the laces, you know, the Seahawks at the Lions. And it was the first touchdown, and he wrote the date. And then he signed it, and he said, put God first on it.
So she said she got to go on the field, and that made it the best day ever. Then Tyler Lockett gives her the football, and she said the best day got even better. And then her Seahawks won, and then after the game, Luke Wilson played for the Seahawks last year, plays for the Lions now, her favorite player. She's wearing a Luke Wilson Seahawks jersey, and then after the game, your favorite player.
My favorite player, and I was wearing his jersey.
Oh, you were? Nice.
Yeah.
His Seahawks jersey.
Yeah, I know.
I assume it was his
Seahawks
jersey.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, yeah. No, of course. Yeah, I would not wear any other team jersey.
So what was that like when you met Luke?
It was amazing. I mean, just for him to take the time out. So we went out back to where all the players were. And Kenzie and I were joking that we didn't want to take our jackets off because we were with all the Lions families and the players. And we were like, we're wearing the Seahawks jersey. We just beat them, you know?
Yeah.
But we were waiting for him to come out, and his parents just randomly happened to be right next to us. So they came over and said hi, which was amazing. They were great and so wonderful and gracious. And then Luke came over and took a couple pictures with us and gave me a signed football. And he was just, I mean, it was really cool. You know, these are guys you cheer for every week. And just for them to take the time to say, hey, it was really, really amazing.
And I guess what just touched me so was, you know, we have our little challenges in life. Here's a young woman, 27 years old. Terminal breast cancer. Listen to the spirit. Listen to the attitude. Listen to the joy at, you know, what you got to experience yesterday.
I kept saying, this is the best day ever. This was the best day ever. It couldn't get any better. And then, you know, to meet your favorite player is is just amazing. And he was so gracious and really sweet and took the time to chat with us. And I just, it was amazing. And I just, that, and then I was like, this day seriously could not get any better. I mean, it was the best day ever.
And when we put this up on My Northwest, we'll show you the picture of Kate and her best friend, Kenzie, and Luke Wilson. They're just all beaming. And God bless Kate and keep her in your prayers. Those are our favorite sound bites of the day. And we got a lot more to come as the Dory Monson Show rolls on here on this Monday afternoon. And down the stretch we come. What a day, what a show, what a show, what a day. And it was quite a show today. If you did not hear the interview I did with the young woman, Kate, who has terminal breast cancer, and yet she joyfully told me about yesterday how and why it was the best day of her life. It was just really emotional and beautiful, and what a spirit. If you miss any of the stuff we do, you can always catch up to it on our podcast right after we get off the air. We have that loaded, and I would encourage you, especially if you think that you're having a bad day, I want you to listen to the spirit of somebody like Kate, who I talked to earlier, and I get emotional every time I think about this incredibly spirited young woman. So you can always catch up on all of that if you go to the Dory Monson Show page, mynorthwest.com. You can also hear my interview with Brock Huard, who talked to Pete Carroll this morning about that big Seahawk win. And with all of that as mere prelude, it's time for today's edition of
Today's Sign That the End Is Near.
Today's sign the world is soon coming to an end. We're 2 days away from Halloween. And that means it's Halloween costume time. I know a lot of people who went to Halloween parties this last weekend. A father says that he regrets that he dressed himself and his son in Nazi costumes during a trick-or-treat event Thursday night. Bryant Goldback and his son, there were pictures of them posted online. It has sparked a ton of outrage. Here is the dad, Bryant. He says he realized after the outrage started circulating on social media that maybe this was a mistake.
It happened about the time we had the first person approach us. I mean, is that time that clued me in that, okay, maybe we shouldn't have did this.
Maybe we shouldn't have did this, he says. A rabbi in their neighborhood says maybe they should have thought about the costumes they wore during Halloween. In the dad says he didn't see the backlash coming. He's dressed as a Nazi soldier. His son is wearing a Hitler costume before they went to their town's Trail of Treats event. Here are other residents in their town.
It just promoted something that was terrible that happened in the past that definitely maybe shouldn't have been brought up.
He could have made his face up. He could have went as, I know clowns, a lot of people are afraid of clowns. And he could have been anything.
Sounds like quite a town. Jeez. The dad has also posted on Facebook about the treatment, the horrible treatment his five-year-old son received when dressed as Hitler. And the dad says he really didn't mean to offend anybody.
Not everybody has the devotion to living history that I have. It's, I don't know how else to put it, except that I'm sorry that I feel like I hurt a lot of people. And, you know, I'd give anything to make it right.
He dressed his son as Hitler because of his devotion to history. Uh-huh. And then in Ontario, Canada, the principal of a Catholic high school has had to apologize because he was doing a uniform check. And at this particular Catholic high school, the girls can't wear skirts that are too short. And somebody recorded what the principal said as he was telling girls that their skirts were too short.
It's like the Me Too movement.
She's asleep in the
pink. Every male in this building in an awkward situation.
You, because their skirts are too short, you girls are putting every male in this building in an awkward situation. And one of the girls, Hannah, student, she says she was shocked by what her principal said.
I was like really caught off guard by what was happening because I didn't expect that to ever happen.
And then she described what else he said.
And then he was like, yeah, like we get it. Like legs are pretty. And we were just kind of like, that's uncomfortable. Like we're underage females in a Catholic school. Like why is that comment being made by someone of authority?
And now the principal has apologized. The parents say, why did the principal bring this up in the context of Me Too?
Talk about the skirts, tell them what to wear them, but do not mention Me Too in that same context. They're really implying that these girls are asking for it by showing their legs.
And a school spokesman now says that the principal crossed a line.
Mr. Tate has said it was a poor choice of words and that it should never have happened. And I would concur with that. We would never want to devalue any of our boys, any of our girls.
Yeah, so the whole concept that a schoolgirl too short uniform would get people worked up. Didn't the police sing about that? Like 40 years ago? Sting was a teacher before he became one of the biggest rock stars on the planet. And that's what this song was all about. Remember the video for this? This is one of the early MTV videos where Sting's the teacher in a classroom.
Young teacher, the subject of schoolgirl fantasy. She wants me so bad, knows what she wants to be.
Man. All of this is today's sign, the end is near.
She's so close now, this girl is half his age. Don't stand.
I gotta get out of here. I've said everything that I have to say for today. But don't you worry. I'm going to go home, think up a bunch of new stuff for tomorrow's show. The Ron and Don Show's coming up next. And we'll see you back here tomorrow. High noon. Anna.
Sometimes it's not so easy to be the teacher's pet. Temptation, frustration, so bad it makes him cry. Wet buster, she's waiting. His car is warm and dry. Don't stand so.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.